Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed on AM 360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own, and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Sure Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
The following is a rebroadcast of a Money Sense episode that originally aired on Thursday, November 9, 2023. Our special guest is community advocate and activist Omar Muhammad from Charleston, South Carolina.
I want to open up, reading from the Quran. This is from Surah Al-An'am, cattle. It's the sixth surah of the Quran. We're going to read the 164th and 165th, the last two ayahs of that surah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Kul aghayra lahi abdi rabban wa huwa rabbul kulli shay wa la taksibu kullu nafsin illa alayha wa la taziru wa ziratun wizra ukra ثم إلى ربكم أرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعل لكم كلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعدين درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم صدق الله العظيم. In the translation: with Allah's name, the merciful, benefactor, the merciful, redeemer. Say, shall I seek for my cherisher other than Allah when he is the cherisher of all things that exist? Every soul draws the meed of its acts on none but itself. No bearer of burdens can bear the burden of another. Your goal in the end is toward Allah. You the truth of the things wherein you disputed. It is he who has made you his agents, inheritors of the earth. He has raised you in the rank some above others, that he may try you in the gifts he has given you. For thy Lord is quick in punishment, yet he is indeed all-forgiving, most merciful. Sadaq Allah Deem, Allah speaks the truth, and surely Allah's words are true. Alhamdulillah. I want to Today we have a special guest, Brother Omar Muhammad. And I asked Omar to send me, he said it, it's his words, I'm going to send a short bio. And I got the bio, started reading through it. And if this is a short bio, I would hate to see a long one. But I know he's on the line, so he can appreciate this. And I'm amazed that my young brother has done a lot. He's accomplished a lot. And I met Omar probably when we started working with developing Graceline Community Incorporated. And you're going to hear more about Graceline in the future, inshallah, as we develop this nonprofit we started trying to educate the public on financial matters. And also we're working on another project through Graceline, and we'll talk more about that as the weeks and months come about. So just do a dua for us in our efforts. We've been working together. I know I've been involved in this almost going on 3 years, and I had a chance to meet Omar. He's working with us on that. And Omar's quiet, brother, you know. But he's done a lot. He's a community advocate, activist. He volunteers for good causes. And he works with Low Country Alliance for Model Communities. And I let him tell you what that's all about. But over the years, Omar's worked with the state of South Carolina. I had to keep reading all this volunteerism he's doing. Then he listed how he get paid. And this, I'm doing this just one of the things he does is get paid. But he currently works as a planner for the city of Charleston. And I assume that's his paying job right now. But anyway, Omar, you with us, brother? As-salamu alaykum, brother Omar.
As-salamu alaykum, can you hear me?
You're on mute. Yeah, I can hear you, bro. Omar. Where did I...
Yes, sir. You got me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you loud and clear. So I'm reading all this stuff, and I finally found that are you still working with the city of Charleston?
Yes, I'm a planner with the city of Charleston currently. Yes.
That's your paying job.
That is one of my paying jobs, yes.
One of the paying jobs. Okay. Well, you volunteer for a lot of stuff, brother. I mean, you know, you're
doing
a lot of
Yes, I volunteer for a lot of community work, which sometimes leads to contracting jobs for me. So that's one aspect of how I get paid. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. All right, that's good, brother. But anyway, after reading, and it's not that I don't want to read it, because you've done a lot of stuff, but I'm proud of you, brother. You're doing a lot of stuff.
I'm doing one.
Just give a recap of to highlight this bio you sent me.
I have been working for an organization called the Low Country Alliance for Model Communities in the city of North Charleston since 2007. Started with them as a volunteer, moved from a volunteer to a chairman of the board. And when my tenure was up for chair, the board asked me to come on board as their executive director. And I have been in that position now for 4 years.
That's good, brother. I'm good, I'm glad you're doing what you do. And the reason I want to highlight that, because there are a lot of people that are advocating doing things, and I think yours is an excellent example of how to get involved in as a volunteer or advocate for certain things and doing it so well and bringing your expertise that you end up making an income out of it, even though that might not have been the first thing that you did when you got involved.
Yes, sir.
That you were able to do that. And so I can understand that. I've worked on the board of several organizations, and one of the organizations asked me to be the accountant, and I couldn't make that contract while I was a member of the board. So in other words, they kicked me off the board so I could be the accountant of the organization. So similar things, but all right. Now, the reason I wanted you to come on today, brother, was to talk about the Justice 40 Initiative. And I'm sure most of our listeners might not have heard about that, but it's something they should hear about. So let's talk about the Justice 40 Initiative. Come about, and what's that all about?
Yes, sir. So when at the time when candidate Biden was running to become the president, he launched this initiative called Justice 40 or Build Back America. It was Build Back America.
Okay.
And he launched that type of campaign, talking about initiatives around how can the country build back better. And he was, you know, they have these tours that they go around the country and they talk to community leaders, community advocates, and we were invited to have many of those conversations with the Biden administration at the time, his campaign team, around what we thought could help to address some of the legacy injustices that were happening to communities, disinvestment that were occurring in communities that we work in, which we call environmental justice communities, and I will explain what environmental justice is. So when President Biden was elected as president, scaled this program up or these ideas up and came up with the Justice 40 initiative. And basically what the Justice 40 initiative is that he issued an executive order that mandated federal agencies look at their programs, look at their budgets, look at their services that they provide to the community, and see how 40% of those benefits can go to disproportionate impact communities. So low-wealth communities, communities that are not invested in, communities that have blight, communities that have environmental challenges, those were the communities that were being targeted. And he directed them that 40% of those services, those funding needed to make it to those communities. And that's basically what the Justice 40 Initiative is. So that money, in, you know, the money is an investment in clean energy, energy efficiency, transit, affordable housing, training and workforce development, and other types of initiatives that reduce barriers to equity in communities. So we knew that this was a focus point of the Biden administration, so we began having conversations very early on with those federal agencies that we were already involved with, having conversations with, working with, about how they plan to get this money out the door to communities. The federal agencies that we work the most with is the Environmental Protection Agency, HUD, which is the Housing Urban Development Agency. We work with HHS, which is the Health Agency for the federal government, and transportation. So those are the primarily federal agencies that we work with as an organization. So we began having conversations early on with them about how they plan to launch their program, get this money out the door. What has happened is that the Biden administration, through this executive order, are investing billions of dollars into these types of initiatives that goes to our community. So my intent, and one of the things that I do, I travel around the country educating our communities about this opportunity and how they can access those funds and what is required and necessary for them to prepare to apply for this funding be awarded this funding and then being able to support programs that are in their community to have those perpetual impacts that this executive order is designed to address.
Now, one of the things that I see in this program that we might not see in other government programs is the requirement to engage stakeholders in
that
consultation and involvement.
That is correct.
When programs come down, they don't talk to anybody in the community. They come and implement what they see, and without asking the people that's immediately impacted or directly impacted, to have them have a voice in what's being done. So I like that part of it.
That is correct, and that's the intent.
That?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. That's the intent of environmental justice. So the definition of environmental justice is the meaningful, well, first, the first part of the definition for environmental justice is the fair application of rules, laws, regulations, policy, funding, decision-making, regardless of a person's ethnicity, race, socioeconomic status. And it goes into some other protected classes, too. But I think you get the point. And then the second part of that definition is the meaningful engagement. And what you just talked about is that meaningful engagement, that communities that are impacted by the funding, impacted by the decision, that they're at the table to help the design, to help to implement, and help to evaluate the impact of whatever decision and programs funding. And Biden made fundamental to this initiative that those agencies, before they could launch any program, they had to show the White House that they engaged the key stakeholders in their programs.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me say just for clarification purposes or whatever. Here's the difference between what we do when there's a Democratic administration involved and what we're doing outside of that, right? All,
yes, sir.
All administrations spend our tax dollars, all of them. And those tax dollars are going to go into the hands of businesses and organizations, right?
That's right.
Regardless. So,
that is correct.
You can be against the man at the top, but don't mean you got to be against the tax dollars.
That's correct.
I see with other ethnic groups. They might be against the guy at the top, but they still get paid.
That is correct. They shift the way that they do the work.
my question to all my brothers and sisters that I meet online that are adamant about being for one candidate to being against another candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would feel better if I know they were positioning themselves some of that money that flowed to America when he was in office. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would feel better if they're doing that. But they're not even doing that.
Right. I mean, we had to, as an organization, regardless of who is in administration, we are still engaging them. So we have Legislature Day, where not only do we visit the state legislature before they go in session, we also have we go to the field in D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and we speak with our representatives there, too, on issues and concerns, bills that we are concerned that may have impact on us, laws that need to be adjusted. We also get heavily involved, regardless of the administration, we get heavily involved in the rulemaking process. There is a public process that is involved in any rules, any laws that are being made. The public has a voice in that decision. We have to get more involved, particularly in those aspects of the rulemaking process that is going to impact our community. We have to be involved in those processes. We have to let those administrations know who we are and why they need to talk with us. It's going to be challenging at first, but you need to be consistent mm-hmm. with it and work with it and stay with it.
Mm-hmm. And all of them have, I'm read through the Justice 40, but all legislations that come that is passed by whatever administration, they have things in that to tell you what are the guidelines to do this and what are the guidelines to do that, right? They all have that.
That
so
is
all
correct.
All you have to do is study the guidelines. Now, keep in mind, because like I said with the Justice 40, I mean, something can happen in 2024, because this is an executive order, right?
It is an executive order, and the...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, executive order could be overturned by any administration. It is not a law. It is not a rule. Yep, any administration come behind the administration that established that executive order and undo it.
Undo it.
Right? Our communities need to take advantage of this Justice 40. The billions of dollars that are coming into our communities, we need to be trying to get as much of it as we can into our communities to do the work that is necessary to improve the quality of life. Some of that is capacity building. So if our organizations need capacity, a lot of the agencies that can't, that doesn't have that, that is not mandated to release grants and all these types of things, they have technical assistance programs. They have other programs that, that you can take advantage of to help build capacity in your organization. They still have to demonstrate how 40% of what they're mandated to do is going to benefit disadvantaged communities. You just need to figure out what it is that they do, what is their Justice 40 initiative, and see how your community or your organization can access it.
All right, we're going to take this break right now. We got a couple of hands up, and we'll come to the callers and see what they have to say. Well, one hand up anyway. But we're going to take this quick break, and we'll be right back.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you, the individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Naila Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
All right, we're back. This is Adam B. R. here on Money Sense, and we're having a conversation with Brother Omar Muhammad, and we're talking about the Justice 40 Initiative, executive order by the President Biden, and how that's going to be impact our communities and what we should be doing. I'm going to go to these callers right now, but I want to come back and talk about what is a disadvantaged community under this particular program and how it's described. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Area code 718-806, 718-806. Assalamu alaikum. Assalamu alaikum. Are you on mute? All right, we'll come back to that. You got to be ready. All right, the next one, area code 248-763.
Islam. This is Luqman, the son of Mary, Ilhaj Ramza Gay, born in the D, 9-17-50. We plan, but there's a master planner. And just like he put you together when you was in your mama's stomach, he's still in control, running things. So don't be no guinea pig for these doctors out here, this all this shit going on. Excuse my language.
Come on. I'm excuse you. I'm gonna cut you off. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Take care. All right. We'll go back to 718-806. Assalamu alaikum. Seems to be one of those mornings, Brother Omar, but we're back.
That's okay.
All right. Yes, sir. Let's talk about disadvantaged communities, because someone might be in a community that can benefit from this, so they need to know. So talk about that, brother.
Yeah, so each agency will have its own definition or criteria that will help them define disadvantaged communities or disproportionate impacted communities. And it's always good when you are looking at a particular agency for funding to understand what their mandate is, how they define the areas that you're looking to seek funding for. But the overall, the federal government has a certain criteria that they look at. And mainly what they look at is census tract information. So how many persons in a particular geographical area that is low wealth, and how we define low wealth is someone that lives below the annual medium income for a particular area. And that's information that anyone can gather from their community. It's an average income for your particular area, and anyone that falls below that more likely will be classified as a living in a disadvantaged community. These communities typically are challenged by built environment, you know, challenges that mean lack of sidewalks or streets or, you know, complete streets, other types of challenges, environmental challenges in their community that leads them to be disadvantaged. So it's a socioeconomic condition. It is an environmental condition that they look at. And then it is educational attainment is also something that they look at. So you can look at, you know, I believe everyone has heard that you can determine the viability of any community by just looking at zip code, right? All of that is census information. So they look at the census information to determine which communities are categorized as disadvantaged communities or communities that are disproportionately impacted. Or what we coin, right, in the environmental justice movement as environmental justice community.
I was reading. There are a few more categories that they use in that. One is, health, housing, legacy, pollution. You know, I know around here we have an area that this big company, Chemours, it used to be called DuPont,
mm-hmm.
and they changed the name to Chemours, right? Well, they determined that a lot of the groundwater had been polluted. The environmental waste that DuPont had dumped into you. And it got so bad, they found the environmental the bad pollution about 15 miles away from the community that the plant was located in. So that stuff is creeping.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, sir.
And they were so strong that the state couldn't get it. They slapped them on the wrist. They gave them some kind of ridiculous fine. When I say ridiculous, if you're a multi-million-dollar company, or let's say $800-900 million company, what is a $30,000 fine gonna do?
That's right.
That's like somebody come up to me and say, they gonna fine me a dollar.
That's right.
Yeah, here's a dollar. And that's what they did. So I'm just saying that there's a environmental pollution. They even get down to health. They say if your zip code has an abundance of asthma,
that's so correct.
Then you can qualify. So
that's correct.
It really opens up the environmental injustice that's going on, and that's one thing that I noticed about the community.
Yes, sir.
Notes about this law. So, like I said, it's an executive order, and you know that the Republicans are chomping at the bits to kill this executive order as much as they can. We know that.
Yes, they are, and they're trying actively now to claw back you know, the funding that has already been allocated, they're trying to claw it back. So we know that, and we have to pay attention to what are their priorities and how do we fit into to the priorities of the next administration or the administration after that.
Mm-hmm.
We always have to be looking at long-term relationship building, regardless if we did not vote for that person, like you were saying earlier. We still have to work for them because they're collecting our tax dollars. Those tax dollars are being released for different programs or to support different programs, and we have to benefit from it too. So we just have to get into the mindset on how can we use the systems that are already established. How can we access those systems and use them for our benefit and to advance the type of life that we want to advance and establish.
You are listening to a rebroadcast of a Money Sense episode that originally aired on Thursday, November 9th, 2023. Our special guest is community advocate and activist Omar Muhammad from Charleston, South Carolina.
There you go. But Omar, we got another caller on the line. I want to get my callers involved in this. Let's go to 972-467. 972-467. That's
Well, like my salam, Ishmael Sami, Dallas, Texas.
Yes, sir.
This is an interesting conversation. I'm getting a lot of new information. My question to Brother Omar is: we have a mayor here in Dallas that he ended up chasing his political party because one of his complaints was that the city council and other members, they were not aligning policies and projects to go with some of these programs that you're talking about. These development, crime, and things like Justice 40. So what part does the city council and the other city officials play in making sure that this is successful? Because it frustrated him. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I do. I like my salam, and I appreciate the question. Yes, sir. There are different levels of the funding. So there's funding that is allocated specifically for governmental agencies, and they are the only ones that can apply for the funding. But some of the requirement for them to receive the funding is that they have to show how they are meaningfully engaging the community or those communities or stakeholders and partners in the work. So they may be challenged, your city may be challenged if they don't have, you know, established relationships with communities. That may be the barrier there. So having conversations with your local decision makers about how do they build those partnerships so that they can apply for those money, because that's going to be one of the requirements for them to get the Justice $40. They have to show how those monies are going to the disadvantaged communities. The second way is that nonprofits can go after the money through various grants, technical assistance, other types of programs that the federal agencies have. And the third one is that if you are a business owner or entrepreneur, you look for contracts, opportunities with the federal government to do some of this legwork for them. Some of that may be how does the government engage communities. So you could be a capacity builder. You could offer training. There's different ways that you can get into the contract side with the federal government. Now, I can tell you the contract side with the federal government is probably one of the lucrative processes that the federal government has. And there is a process in which if you are a minority business individual, you can become what is called 8A, the number 8, the letter A, contractor. And that's a certification process that certifies you as a minority business owner, entrepreneur, and you will get put on a priority list. So when that agency are looking for those services to be provided for whatever program or initiative, they will look on that list first, and they kick the contract. Now, you have to qualify now. You know, they're just not going to hand you a contract because you say, I'm a black business owner. You have to qualify for this, so you know, the certification process. But you will be listed on that priority list, and they will choose your firm as one of the contractors for the particular project. It, you know, it, and it varies. Another way that you can become a contractor for the federal government, you find someone else that is a larger firm, and you work under them until you get the experience to show that you have the qualifications to get your own prime contract. So I hope that's helpful. Your local decision makers need to establish relationships with your community so they can better qualify for these Justice $40, which is going to require them to have those partnerships.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Brother Ismail. I appreciate that. And that's a key issue. If a grant or the hopes of government money encourages your local officials to work with you, and just say stakeholders in the community, even to try to find some stakeholders in the community, that's a good sign that you need to vote them chumps out. They shouldn't be over you in office. I mean, how can you not have constituents and you're not even dialoguing with them? And that's what happens a lot. The chance for a big windfall from the federal government or even the state government, and then you had the local city officials that are scrambling to try to pull some stakeholders to the table and whatever, just as a pretext of saying, hey, we have everybody at the table answering them, whatever. And I see that here locally. There's always efforts to bring people to the table when they should be at the table all the time anyway. What do you see in that, Brother Omar?
Yes, sir. I mean, we're challenged with that too, and that means it puts the onus on the advocates, on the local leadership, to ensure that their issues and concerns are always in the face of the local decision makers. For example, on Tuesday had a mayoral election where a new mayor was selected, and there were several commissioners that have been elected. Our organization is putting a packet together where we're going to send this packet out introducing our organization to these new leaders. And we're going to request that we sit down with them before they seat their administration, because there are going to be changes in leadership in department. And we're going to send them a packet request that we sit down and talk with them so we can talk about our concerns, what we think, how the city should work with us addressing those concerns. Now, our approach is we're not looking for any money, so we're not looking for you to commit no dollars. That is not what we're coming to you with. The city has other things that they can do for communities other than just writing them a check. You can write communities a check all day long. If they don't have a plan for how they're going to use that money is worthless. So we need the city at the table to help us improve the quality of life for the communities that we're working in beyond financial investment. We need this administration to care about those communities that this previous administration did not do any type of investment in those communities. And we plan to change that with this new mayor that has been elected and the three or four new commissioners that will be on the city council.
Just as a note, Omar, has anybody approached you about running for office?
I'm not interested in running for office. I do not like politics.
I understand, but I'm just curious, has anybody approached you? Because I get approached
They
all
always
time.
Do. I get approached all the time about, I'm not interested.
I say, no, exactly. I say, I'm not running. I'm not going because if I ran and won, I had to talk about myself because I talk about everybody.
That is correct. that is correct. I get it. And how I see it is that our political system was never designed to work for us. So if I feel that a lot of our politicians go in with good intent to do good work, but then they get corrupted by the system. This I rub your back, you rub my back, and you know, to get things passed. And to me, that would be very frustrating and aggravating. So I'd rather aggravate the system from the outside to get what we need in our communities. And a lot of times what that means is bringing other stakeholders and money to the table that embarrasses the city, and the city is drug along with the process because they don't want to be seen, you know, they don't want to appear to not be involved in a major investment in communities from the federal government or the state. So the city is drug along, right? That's our approach. Because recently, our organization was just awarded two federal grants from EPA that amounted to $1.5 million. And this is from the Justice 40 initiative from the EPA. We were awarded two grants for training, to provide training in our community around climate change and around how to make communities more resilient to flooding, extreme weather events, these could be man-made or natural disasters. And we will be working with our state agency, one of our state agencies, to perform a training in communities. They have communities design and prepare for disasters. They will prepare their own plan, a community-based plan to address disasters. And then the grant that we have will help them design and develop a local resiliency hub so they don't have to wait for the government to respond to any emergency in their community. They will have the capacity and the resources through their resiliency hub to respond to those emergencies, those local neighborhood emergencies.
Well, one thing
And we received $1.5 million to do that.
Yes, sir. Alhamdulillah. One thing I say to the local politicians that we might elect them, and they go into office as our candidate, but because we don't know how to support them once they get there, in about 6 months they become their candidate.
That is correct. Or what I have seen too is that we don't understand how the local politics work. And like, for example, your councilman may have to vote for an issue just to be able to bring it up later because he doesn't have the support to stop it. But our community react in a negative way because he voted for it. If he did not vote for it, that means that he could never bring it back up for consideration later. So we have to understand how our local political process works and why certain things are done from a strategic perspective.
Right. So true. I mean, that's any way you go. I'm sure in everybody's city that you live in, types of dynamics are going on, right?
Yes, sir.
And guess who knows how to work that?
That is correct.
The location knows that.
They know how to work it to benefit them and their friends and their family and their community. And we sit on the sideline complaining because we don't understand how the decisions are made in our local government and how we need to be showing up to these city council meetings. We need to serve on our planning boards and our commissions. Nothing holds us back from being the only thing we have to do is fill out an application and serve on the local commission, the board.
Right. And that's why I tell brothers and sisters in the Fairville, go out and get involved. Join local boards and stuff like that. Right? When I first moved to town, that's what I did. I would go serve on boards. I served on the airport commission. I served on the human relations commission, whatever.
Yep.
And one time you had to be appointed by a city council member or even the mayor, right?
Right.
So we had this guy, he was the mayor pro tem. And everybody said he was a racist. Not saying it was or wasn't. Heck, I mean, even the people you think ain't racist, if you use your definition, they racist.
That's
right. I wanted to get on the airport commission, right? And I went to a couple of African-American council members, and they said, well, we already got somebody here that we're going to appoint. Okay. So I went to the mayor pro tem. Right? That everybody said it was a racist. And I knew he needed, and I said, I'd like to serve on the commission. Oh, he was more than happy to. I'm sure in his mind he was saying, I got to prove to them I'm not racist. I'm going to appoint Adam. And I made it. I was appointed, right? Because I knew that he needed to show me being a racist. You're talking about using strategy, Omar. That's strategy, right?
Yes,
and the African Americans, they trying to figure out how did I get up there. So sometimes you got to understand. You have to understand how things work.
That is correct.
But anyway, you got to do it. So, we got about a few minutes left. Let me play up PSA again, and we'll come back and we'll wrap up today's program. If you have any questions or comments, just press 1 to get in the queue. Let me say that Omar is very knowledgeable and very effective at what he does. So it's something we all can learn from. All right, we'll be right back after this message, inshallah.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, we're back again. This is Adam B.R. here. I'm understanding that we're just having a conversation with Brother Omar Muhammad. Omar is a community activist, and he works with several local nonprofits. And he also, in his job, he works for the city of Charleston. If I'm saying that right, city of Charleston. So we're talking about the Justice 40 initiative. You probably have heard of it under the name of Build Back Better, executive order by President Biden, and he had to go to the executive order route because in that toxic Congress that wouldn't support anything right now to get things done, you have to do it through executive orders and whatever. Preferably, it would have been nice to be a law, but it's not. It's an executive order, which means it's easier to overturn should the other side get back into office. And and that shows you the importance of the 2024 election to get out and vote and to put more reasonable people in office. So don't want to hear what I hear some people say, well, I don't vote, or my vote don't count, whatever. And I tell them, you're exactly right. If you don't vote, ain't nothing to count. So don't be a self-predicting situation. All right. So, Brother Omar, what do you see for the future in terms of what you're doing? You say you go around the country and talk about the things that you do, and thank Allah you were able to come on this program right now to speak to an audience that are around the country. What do you see for the future?
Yeah, for the future, what I see is that there's going to be a new green economy. where fossil fuel is going to be, we won't be completely off of fossil fuel, but there's a transitioning happening in this country, around the world, actually, where we are starting to encourage more use of renewable sources of energy, wind, solar, other types of renewable sources, water, for example. And we have to be prepared. We have to prepare ourselves, our communities, our families for that transition. Because if we don't, we're going to get left, our communities are going to get left behind on another multiple economy, right? An economy that is going to drive a lot of resources and money. What I mean by that is that we have to focus on where there are going to be job growth in the renewable sector. How can our communities get involved, and how can we get educated around where this growth is going to occur? And how do we start to train our residents and our communities to prepare for this new green economy that is coming? Our businesses have to prepare for what it looks like to be to sustain this green economy, and what role can our businesses play? Who's going to maintain these renewable infrastructures that the Biden administration is investing in? Who's going to maintain and sustain these infrastructures? Those are long-term, right, the infusion of investment. But what about 50 years from now, 25 years from now? Who's going to maintain and sustain these investments in communities around renewable and sustainable infrastructure investment? I think that is where the future lies. We need to start having those conversations because really, in my estimation, we're already behind the eight ball. And we need to pay catch-up and keep up so that we can benefit from this new green economy that is coming, that really that is here.
Yes, sir. I hear you, brothers. And you mentioned being behind the eight ball. We as African Americans are not even on the table. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, how can you get further behind being behind the eight ball? Well, we ain't on the table.
Right.
So being behind the eight ball, really speaking, and we not say that. You talk about investments, you talk about jobs of the future, you talk about having. If the economy is moving that way, then that means that being in the fast food industry as a hamburger flipper, whatever, that our children shouldn't even be thinking like that, right?
No. That's going to change. They need to be thinking about robotics. That's going to be flipping those burgers.
It's going to be robotics.
It's going to be robots.
Right? You know, so when I think I've said on this program, when I need to get some service, let's say it might be housing repair or whatever, right? It's hard to find aftermarket laborers.
Yeah.
Or contractors.
Yeah.
It's hard to find. I don't know what it is in your own, but here it's hard to find. And it used to be, you remember how the Hispanics came in and they would do menial stuff? Well, you know, people, they work for companies and whatever. And you can always get the Hispanic to do it cheaper, right?
Right.
Well, you can't do that no more. Why? Because they are aware now that they can charge the going price.
They're in demand.
They're in demand. They can charge the going price. So now they have a job. Now, we can't find people to do work, you know. And that's what I mean by not being on the table, brother. And so
I understand.
For those on the call, if you have children, grandchildren, or whatever, you need to start preparing them and get their focus away from the internet and the social media, whatever. Get them away from that for a minute. To get down what it's going to really take. You know, I talk to young people all the time, and I mention that about what they're doing in the future. It's like a deer in headlights.
Yeah.
You know? And I want to go knock on their head and say, is anybody home? They look at me
right.
Crazy.
Well, you know, it's kind of our fault, right? Because we let our local education systems remove trades from the schools. Everybody is not going to go to college. We know that. And the trades is okay to get into. In fact, there are some trades that pays more than a college a degree, or more than an advanced degree in many cases.
I'm an accountant, and you'd be surprised. I do tax returns for people that have that, and I do tax returns for people that have a college degree. And you're right, the trades are making more and able to support their family more.
That is correct.
It's a shame.
We need to, have those conversations. Okay.
We definitely do. We do. And I want to get him in because if I don't let him in, I probably won't hear about it for next year. Let's go to 914-434-914. Muhammad, why are you waiting so long to come in, man?
No, I just came over. I just want to, just mention about not preparing our grandchildren, great-grandchildren for the future. What I don't know, Brother Omar knows about 150. We only got 5 or 6 full-time schools in this whole community. The whole community, we got less than 6 full-time schools. So how are we going to prepare our future grandchildren if we don't have any schools to teach them? Basically, education. Number one priority, we got 5 schools. So how are we going to prepare them if we don't have schools to teach them? That's my question. You, but Omar, and Matt.
Yes, sir. I hear you loud and clear. Yes, sir. I hear you loud and clear, Brother Muhammad. That is going to be a continuous challenge for us. We as a community have to prioritize what is important for our community. And if that means regionally, right, we support where the major school is, then how can we do that from a local perspective? How can we do it from a regional perspective? And from that, we grow successful other schools that spin out of that, right? The need to address the need for our students. So if we have to start at a regional perspective, let's start there. And see how we can support. I think Adam has the financial process that supports our school in the community. We need to get on board with that to support those schools in a financial way. But look at how can we, as local masjids, right, as regional Islamic organizations, how can we support our school networks and build out those networks to support our community. But that's going to be a continuous challenge to us until we prioritize our local effort around education.
Yes, sir. Good point, brother. All right, Muhammad.
Excellent.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right, okay. Alhamdulillah. Yes, sir. All right.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Sister Khalida Afar Abdulaziz, Program Manager for American Muslim 360. CWSC is inspired by the visionary leadership of the late Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahimahullah Alay, and his proposition that our communities need a studious group of persons, or an intelligentsia, studying our history and circumstances and envisioning a brighter future for succeeding generations to live better in America. In 1999, an important step was taken to fulfill the shared vision of structuring an intelligentsia with a national think tank capable of serving first our community and then eventually national and global interests. We welcome you to American Muslim 360 listenership. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast every Monday since episode that originally aired on Thursday, November 9th, 2023. Our special guest was community advocate and activist Omar Muhammad from Charleston, South Carolina.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
God's peace be upon you. This is Muhammad Sharif. As we know, everything begins with the seed. Rain International is world leader in seed nutrition and the first to market seed-based products. Our flagship product is called Soul, S-O-U-L. The main ingredient is the black cumin seed. Here are a few reasons to drink Soul. Supports the healthy immune system. Give a body the boost to stay healthy and strong. Improve indigestion. Decrease infection. Remove inflammation and other benefits. This is an opportunity to improve your health and increase your wealth. Please call or text me at 914-434-375. Please join me in supporting CWSC, the Community-Wide Shura Conference and AM360, in remaking the world into a better place. We support the 50-year human family planning and look forward to doing business with you. Our website is raininternational.com. We are available at any time. Please call this number, 914-434-3275. Thank you.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That is peace be unto you. With God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer, we'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan, and this is the program that deals with current events, trending topics, and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is, and always should be, the human perspective. So today, in keeping with that mission, we are definitely taking on the human perspective, and we hope that it is of some benefit to you on this day called Thanksgiving, a day of giving thanks, which we shouldn't just wait for one day, but it's good to have a day set aside to give thanks and really to take advantage of the opportunity to be with family and friends out of the normal routine or the rat race of always running around and trying to make a living, it does have a history that's somewhat checkered. You know, we are aware of that. And that's really what we want to speak to you about, these so-called holidays, you know. We always want to extract the good from things and be aware of the negative influences and find some way to deal with those negative influences, not be dealt with by those negative influences. So you might say, well, what negative influences? Well, these holidays, which is really now the holiday season, you know, and I've been making note of it. I've been making mental note of it for some time now, that really the so-called holiday season begins at the end of the summer, even before the summer is over. You will see signs in the stores, in the department stores, et cetera, in the pharmacies of the coming holiday season, which many of these businesses have their profitability baked in to a profitable holiday season. You know, they need those revenues from these so-called holidays to keep themselves afloat. If those holidays weren't there, their marketing ploys to get people to spend money that they don't have, you know, because it is possible, you know, and I've heard people, Christians, saying before and bemoaning the fact of the commerciality, you know, of the holidays, particularly Christmas, you know, and so it affects all of us. This is going back to our first experiences as Muslims, as new Muslims, and you know, during the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Allah forgive him, sins and grant him the paradise. He very wisely, had us. We didn't fast during the month of Ramadan. We fasted during the month of December. It was great, great wisdom in that, because it took us out of the spell, I'll call it the spell, of this holiday season, the imperative, you know, the word imperative comes from imperial, you know, where you are commanded to partake in something. And you say, well, nobody's forcing you to do it. Well, let's look at that. Let's look into it. You know, the impact of culture on a people is extremely persuasive, influential. You know, they talk about influencers today, you know, and some people have become such powerful influencers that they have podcasts that have rivaled and even outstripped the mainstream media. Do you know that? That this guy Joe Rogan has 50 million people listening and had 50 million people listening when he interviewed Donald Trump. And they were talking about interviewing Kamala Harris as well. And I believe he's the most influential one, or one that has the most listeners, you know. So there's influences, people that influence, and people turn to them to get news and information. people turn to them, those people, those influencers, to get news and information. So much so that the so-called traditional media, the mainstream media, the corporate media, is fighting for its life. It's fighting for its life. Even MSNBC is talking about spinning off and they're cutting salaries, et cetera, you know, of some of their top people. They're cutting by millions of dollars and talking about selling MSNBC. You know, even Elon Musk, I don't know how true it is, but they've been floating that prospect that, you know, the so-called world's richest man, that he might be looking to buy MSNBC, you know. So influence is very important. New York City has been called, I believe rightly so, the communications capital of the world. The communications capital of the world. For one thing, you have all these giants, MSNBC and CNN and Fox News and, you know, regular NBC, CBS, ABC, you know. They're located, or they have, I know at one time the headquarters for CNN was Atlanta. I don't know if it's still there, but you have here the New York Times, you know, and New York Daily News, even the New York Post. And that's bringing me to the point that I'm making about that. The New York Post is a financial loser for the owner of the New York Post, which is Rupert Murdoch, and has never been profitable. And yet he continues to bankroll and churn out the New York Post. If you go into any, you know, in fact, newspapers, period, part of the problem that we face with the with our own Muslim journal is that physical newspapers are not as popular a means of people getting their news and information as they once did. Whether it's the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, etc. They all have online counterparts. Young people are dealing with their news and information online. You know, I worked, maybe many of you did, as a paper boy, as a young boy coming up, where you had to deliver the paper, you bring in the news, and you had to actually ride by on your bike and throw the paper on the person's property onto their steps, if you were good, and right in front of their door where they could walk outside and get the information. That's, you know, that technology is very, not entirely obsolete, but you know, at that time, that was the way that you got your information. You know, if you look at some of the older movies, especially black and white movies, or even from the 70s, The Godfather, you know, he learns of his the attempted assassination. Al Pacino, who was playing the son of the Godfather, he learns of his father's attempted assassination by walking by a newsstand. And he sees a headline, front page news, that his father was shot. So you don't have to go back that far to black and white films. You know, this is a film that is probably on, especially during these so-called holidays, if you turn on your television now, you can probably watch The Godfather. And certainly on up and two, and one and two, and there's a third. You know, the third sequel is not nearly as popular as one and two, critically acclaimed as one and two, you know. And so that's how people found out things. You know, he was at a hotel and he had stepped out with his fiance and they were walking past a newsstand. I don't think you can find newsstands too much anymore. In order to find a newsstand now, and I'm talking about New York City, which we said is looked at as the communications capital of the world. I used to know where to go and find if I wanted to find a a publication, a magazine, a news, or whatever, and I knew certain ones uptown, downtown that you would go, and there were actually some that were open 24 hours a day. Yes. I know one over on the east side whenever I wanted to get a paper, and I was a very avid reader, you know, of newspapers. Certainly, consolidation has taken place, you know, not only in the news business, in the communications business, but in many businesses, you had the phenomena that they referred to as mergers and acquisitions, where the big companies would gobble up, acquire, or the smaller companies, they would acquire the smaller companies, and it happened in banking, and it happened in the airline industry, et cetera, and other industries as well. There would be mergers, you know, and sometimes they would lose the name of one of the companies, and sometimes they would hyphenate the names, or they would just take the name of the bigger company. So this is what happened in the communications business, particularly in newspapers. In New York City, I need to look up that statistic to see how many newspapers. I will look it up to see how many newspapers came out in New York City. But it was probably daily newspapers. We had the Daily News, you know. We had the New York Post, and we were talking about that Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, unless he sold it. You know, these things come and go. But why does he keep holding on to the Post? You go into stores now, and you hardly see any people buying the New York Post. Once in a while, maybe months will go by, I will see an article, a front-page article, that I'm attracted to, and I'll buy that paper. But I couldn't tell you the last time I did that. That's something that I used to get papers. I used to get subscription to the, not every day, but the Sunday Times was a very popular paper, And it was so thick. I mean, it was like a book. The Sunday New York Times, oh, yeah, and it had a magazine section in there, a whole magazine inside the paper, where you would see nice articles and advertisement, et cetera, especially for this time of year. You know, people would take out ads in their paper. I forget the, it was called the New York Times Sunday section, you know. And New York Times Sunday paper was a part of a cultural phenomenon, you know. But a lot of these legacy, what they call them legacy media, have lost their cachet. They've lost their, people don't look at them the same anymore. And I just saw a discussion about that recently. You know, people have lost trust in legacy media or corporate media. You know, one of the phenomena of Trump was that he didn't really coin it, what people are telling me, but he certainly popularized that phrase of fake news. And there was a big blowback, big pushback on that, and there was certainly a high measure of truth to it, fake news. And if you really look at it now, and so they took umbrage with that, of course, and they were just they got very emotional about it, you know. And the guy gave this one reporter, I think his name was Vanderhyde, gave him an award, and he started using profanity, you know. He's telling you not to believe in us. Well, real reason not to believe in the so-called the veracity. There's real reason not to believe in the veracity of the so-called mainstream media. And it's not because, you know, they take, and I've had discussions back and forth with people who were part of it that were very insulted you know, at that notion. And they would tell me of the people who had high standards of integrity and trust, which I don't doubt or deny, which I agree with. There are some people, but that's not the they are the exception to the rule. They're the exception to the rule. You know, most of us, and they did a good job of pushing that narrative, which was true. You know, of Fox News being faux news. They would spell it F-A-U-X, Fox, faux. You know, not real news. And to a large degree, that's true. I was going to say was true. Is true. It is true. They have people coming on that are just really giving opinion. They're really giving their opinion, and it's from more of a what they would refer to as a right-wing position. When you had MSNBC really doing the same thing from a left-wing position. They weren't always as outrageous, but they have gotten that outrageous. On their end of the spectrum as, say, a Fox News. And then CNN pretended to be, well, we right there in the middle. We right there in the middle. If you really do a critique, and there's an organization called FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, that does critique of media like that. If the mainstream media gives you one perspective, and take for example, or you're only allowed to have discourse within the quote unquote accepted means of discussion. Just the other night, I was watching a show that I watch, and I don't watch as much as I used to. You know, I used to be what they call a news junkie. Like I told you, I used to read papers, newspapers, several newspapers every day and watch it. And my wife still says I watch too much news. You know, she's not as interested in watching the news as I am, you know. We have to have two different televisions, you know, because her content of what she's watching may not be as interesting to me as well, you know. And so, but I was just watching the program the other night, and that I watched Abby Phillip, which is a young lady, African-American lady or Caribbean-American lady that hosts a show on CNN at 10 o'clock. And she has a pretty lively discussion. She has a panel of guests. She usually has, and so one of the individuals who's I think his name is Kevin something, Mr. Wonderful from the Shark Tank, and he was expressing his views on the race, and he was saying that Kamala Harris is a loser, and the woman that she had taken that was sitting in for her took exception to that. So we don't call names on here, and she said, she did lose, didn't she? She did in fact lose, didn't she? And she shut him down. She wouldn't allow him to say it. And also, I think I highlighted on here before another individual, young black man, African American man from the so-called conservative right wing era, Shermichael Singleton, very intelligent. I don't agree with his stances on the war and in the East and Israel, et cetera, but he's a very circumspect young man. He's not a person given to emotion, you know. And they had another LGBTQWXYZ. I mean, he got so many letters now I can't keep up. And he was talking about women or men, biological men, being allowed to play sports and competing with women, whether it be in martial arts or boxing, you name it, or basketball, track, swimming, you know. And the person was cutting him off. And he said, well, they're not men, they're women. And, you know, most of us that are still in touch with our faculties, you know, because you call them trans women, you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. But that person, he said, well, you're cutting me off. And he said, I'm going to cut you off. If you don't say that they're women, I'm going to cut you off. And Abby Phillip defended the other person. She was shutting down Shermichael. and say, hey, maybe you want to rephrase that so you can be a little more respectful. Why would he have to rephrase it? He didn't say anything disrespectful. He didn't use profanity or scream that the person was screaming at him. So there's a certain level of discourse that you're allowed to have on the show. Now, probably on Fox, you would have been allowed to say that. Huh? They would have given more leeway to it, you know, I'm sure, because they're on a different part of the political spectrum. You know, MSNBC would have probably agreed with they would have agreed with Abby Phillip. And she was, you know, really her job to me as the host is to be more of a referee, to let people give their position. And you see it on other shows like The View, you know, they will shout somebody down, even one of their own panelists, one of their co-hosts. If they give an opinion, they're really not there to give their view. That's the name of it. It was originally touted as a program that will give women the women's view, with Barbara Walters, you know, as the host, the number one. She had co-hosts, but she was the boss. And now that's moved on to Whoopi Goldberg. So they don't allow you. They don't really allow you to give your view. If you give a view that they don't like, oh, they will erupt. I mean, they would get very upset. You know, and they won't allow you to get that across. In fact, they had a whole program with trans, so-called trans people, trans women, trans, on their show, and they were just delighted. They were just delighted to have those spokespersons on their show. So you listen to New Day, Father Son in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. We have some important announcements for you, so please don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Assalamu alaikum. This is your brother, Kareem Hamid, inviting you to join in the study group of the lecture of Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi, broadcast Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. The first hour, we shall play a lecture or address from Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi. And in the second hour, we shall open up the telephone line and share with each other the various beneficial points of interest contained in the lecture or address. So join the study group of the lectures of Imam Waraseddin Muhammad Rahimallah Alayhi on the evolution of revolutionary thought and created purpose every Saturday at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time on American Muslim 360. Let's share. Thank you. Alhamdulillah.
Join us every Monday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern Time for an episode of Optimal Health with your host, Abdul Shaheed, your certified symptometry health coach and doctoral student at the American School of Symptometry. It is our aim and objective every week on am360.org to enlighten health-conscious individuals on root cause therapeutics and provide them with guidance on general wellness and cell nourishment. Planet Earth is well known in symptometry as an echo chamber of illusion and a testing ground with booby traps everywhere. Come join us each week to learn about these booby traps that cause health to be denied. Connect at am360.org and 24-hour streaming at 701-719-4197. Call in to listen to speak to the host at 515-605-9891 or 425-292-4253. Share comments at info@cwsc.us. Tweet us at CWShura. Email us at info@cwsc.us. Visit our parent corporation, Community Wide Shura's Conference, at cwsc.us. or leave a listener comment at 910-317-0297. You are listening to AM 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
And we're back. So, yeah, I just really wanted to kind of lay that foundation for the discussion of what we're talking about with these holidays and how they affect us and affect our families. So, you know, we've been, those of us that came through the first experience and those that, and even if those who came through under the guidance and leadership of Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Bilal Lay, you know, we dealt with these, what Dr. Naim Akbar called chains and images of psychological slavery. I just want to make another point, finish up my point about the so-called mainstream media and why they are fake news. They only give one perspective, and that is every time they come on and they're telling us about what happened in Gaza, they're talking to me from Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. I don't want to hear that. Not unless you're going to tell me, you're going to give me someone else that's also giving me their perspective. You're giving me government officials from Israel that's telling me what's happening. And what I explained to my daughter the other day, part of, they say the first casualty of war is the truth. So they're not going to tell you the truth. They're going to tell you how they're winning. They're not going to tell you how they're losing. But, you know, if you listen to them, it would make it seem like, you know, they're winning. They're winning everything. They're not losing. First of all, the war in Gaza is not a war. That's not a war. That's like putting a 12-year-old kid in the ring with Mike Tyson when he's in his prime and calling it a fight. That's not no fight. Because it's uneven. They've got the most advanced technology. They've got the intelligence capability, and with the United States helping them, not only giving them money, but giving them material, EL, not AL, AL and EL, war material, weaponry, the most advanced weaponry, and helping them. Openly saying we are intercepting bombs or intercepting missiles that are coming at them. So that's not a war. I'm talking about and now in Lebanon, once in a while you'll hear a little differently. You'll hear a little differently. People that are reporting from Beirut, which is under attack as well. So they call it a war. It's not a war. It's just a massacre on civilian people. So this is what I'm talking about. That's fake news. That's fake news. And they won't give you the other side because what they've done is to paint one side, well, they're terrorists. Whoever we fight is a terrorist. Why would we want to hear from them? We don't want to hear from them. We only want to hear from the good guys, right? And the same thing with the war in Ukraine. They only want to tell you what the side that they're backing, really. And I was having a discussion with one of the men. He said, well, they're putting up a better fight, and they've killed a lot of – no, that's a proxy war. They're not fighting Russia. They couldn't fight Russia by themselves. It's America fighting Russia through them. It's just like America was fighting China in Vietnam, fighting China through Vietnam. It was a proxy war. And even some people say, how could they put up such a fight unless they had Chinese troops in there? Maybe they did. I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised. And now we're hearing that they have Polish troops and German troops to back up the Ukrainians. Huh? So they're not giving us the real deal on what's going on. They're not telling us what's going on. They tell us what they want us to know. And they will have you believe. They will have you believe that this is what happened or that's what happened. And that's how they demoralize you, because you only hear of yourself losing or whoever you want to win, you hear them losing. Getting into these holidays. Why? Those of us who came through that, we came through changes, images of psychological slavery. I forget the name of the book, maybe one of y'all remember, that the brother wrote on holidays. We came through having to deal with Halloween and whether allow our children to wear costumes or trick-or-treat and Christmas, et cetera. Coming through the Nation of Islam and the extreme of fasting during the month of December to break us out of that, to get us to come out of Egypt. And the man broke that down for us. Coming out of Egypt doesn't mean physically walking out of Egypt. No, that's not what it means. To come out of Egypt means to come out of the mentality of Egypt. So we haven't come out of that. And I'm looking at a Christian preacher. You know, he's a little entertaining, a little extreme sometimes, but he brought out a Christmas tree that he was against in church. And he said, some of y'all got this in your church. You got it in your house. And I said that to Muslims. I'm going to say it to them tomorrow. You got a Christmas tree in your house. I'll be wrong because it's not close enough to Christmas for the Muslims. But Christmas, they will have trees in their house. And they'll tell you the reason why they have it is because, well, you know, I have Christians in the house, they live in it, et cetera. But my point is, I'm not looking to blame anybody. I'm saying the influence is there, whether you like it or not. And I've told you all that story before. I've told you that around this time of year, Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who was one of Minister Farrakhan's staunchest followers and a spokesman for him before he sat him down, that I ran into him in a supermarket. I forget where the supermarket was. And you know how they play what they call Muzak. They don't call it music. They call it Muzak because it's canned music that they play it low. They play it in elevators or they play it in supermarkets and things like that. And I ran into Khalid, and he said to me, and you know how extreme he was, right? And he said to me, isn't this a damn shame? Here I am, Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and they got me singing Christmas songs. Why? What he was saying was they're playing them songs in the background in your subconscious mind. And we weren't born into many of us, most of us weren't born into Al-Islam. We decided to accept Islam as adults or young, you know, teenagers. So we came up in a different cultural environment. So those songs and that Christmas spirit is still there. The Halloween spirit is still there. Although we learned of the pagan roots of these holidays, that they're steeped in unconscious paganism. Talking about trick or treat. That's not Muslims do that. Either you give me a treat or I'm going to give you a trick. And the trick is not nothing. It's usually something nasty, right? Where they throw eggs. And I can recall myself doing that as a young. You know, it's not just for, that's for the kids. No, I ain't for no kids. You have adults dressing up as the sexy nurse, the naughty nurse, so and so. No, it ain't for no kids. Everybody's participating in it. And they'll come wearing their stuff to work. You can even work in a bank, and you'll see them with antlers on, reindeer antlers on. Oh, that's cute. That's so cute. It permeates the atmosphere. And if you don't participate in it, working on your job, they want to know what's wrong with you. How come you? What's going on? You're not in the spirit? Oh, this person is a stick in the mud. This person is a, they don't enjoy the heart. Get into the spirit. And what is a spirit? A spirit is not always good. They may still do it, but they used to have signs at the liquor store called wines, and spirits. Because that alcohol puts a spirit in you. Huh? That alcohol puts a spirit in you. Huh? And we know, listen to some of those Christmas songs, you know, Merry Christmas, baby. Nick won't sound like he's high singing. Show me the slurring his words. Merry Christmas, baby. I'm lit up like a Christmas tree. Me and he's high. He's high off alcohol. Huh? So we have to acknowledge those things, but at the same time, we don't want to be in that original spirit that we had when we were first introduced to Islam, where we are anti-everything or being the one that's what they call the fun police, right? We have to have matured. We have to have matured. We don't say, when people say, Merry Christmas, and I don't celebrate Christmas. No, you don't have to be that person. You can say, enjoy your holiday. That's what I say. I say enjoy your holiday. Enjoy your holiday. Huh? Or I'll say season's greetings. Now, the reason why we know that this, that the people who are the perpetrator, who are the ones behind it, the ones that are making money, most of the money behind, they're not even Christians. But aside from that, Christmas has nothing to do with the birth, the alleged birth, of Isa ibn Maryam. And I'll tell you what the Christians are saying. This Pastor Gino Jennings, he said that. And it's built into it, racism, et cetera. Now, I'll play for you with the woman from Fox, used to work at Fox. I think her name is Megyn Kelly. And what she said about Santa. And they're talking about, you know, with DEI, diversion, equity and inclusion, the Trump supporters, they're against that. They don't want diversity, equity, and inclusion because they're saying, oh, that means hiring people that are not qualified. Now, what would make them say, but just listen to what she's saying, huh? Let's listen to what she's saying about it, okay? I don't know why this thing is. Oh, hold on. Okay. She says Santa is right. He's right. She's a Fox News mystery from some years ago, you know. And I'll let you listen to an excerpt of it. See if I can get that.
I should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed. I thought, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa. You know, and by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white, but this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is, just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about the kids. Okay, I wanted to get that straight. But Jedediah, when I read the piece, the author seems to have, you know, she's African-American, and she seems to have real pain at having grown up with this image of a white Santa, and she speaks about it kind of honestly, saying, I didn't really understand why that had to be.
Yeah, she wants Santa to be inclusive, and I had the same reaction. Initially, I was thinking, oh, this is more politically correct nonsense. This is hypersensitivity in our culture. And then you read the piece, and you really walk through the steps with her. I think it's a tribute to her writing. And you realize if you were a young kid, and you were African-American, and your Santa Claus was white, it would affect you when you went to school. Maybe you wouldn't feel that you were part of that tradition. Now, she suggests that a penguin should be Santa.
Okay, that's where she goes off the rails.
Well, I think that's kind of interesting, though. Sort of brings that cartoonish component into it, and I think that makes all kids kind of feel welcome in the process. So I see where she was going with that.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't make all kids.
Hey, I like penguins.
It makes all birds feel welcome. I've given her name is Aisha Harris. I've given her, her view on where she was going with it. But just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean was a white man too, but you know it's like we have, he was a historical figure, and that's a verifiable fact, as is Santa. I just want
right.
kids watching to know that.
Yeah.
But my point is, how do you just revise it, you know, in the middle of the legacy of the story and change Santa from white to black.
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
Okay, we got that. So the sister, she got a Muslim name. That don't mean she's a Muslim. Aisha Harris or whatever her name is. She's upset because she wants a black Santa. And I was talking about, and you can see them starting to change the stores, the themes in the stores. I have pictures of it, of a black Santa. So they want to include you. Why? Not because they want you to feel better. They want you to join in so that you'll pay some, you feel you don't want to get alienated. They don't want you to be alienated. They don't want you to be alienated. They want to keep you in their tradition. And your civil rights part is saying, who is she to say Santa's? She's right. The mythological figure of Santa, Saint Nick, et cetera, does come from Europe. She ain't wrong. She's right. You have been so sensitized that we want to feel included. No, you shouldn't want to feel included in that because that ain't you. And she's so ridiculous that she is pushing that Santa's white, not realizing, yeah, the mythology comes from Europe, but it's not reality for them either. Huh? It's not reality. 706-627. State your name where you're calling from, please.
Yes, I said, I'm alaikum. This is Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad by the way of Hinesville, Georgia. And what's ridiculous about it is that Allah has told each and every one of us created human beings, this is your way. It's been that way ever since I blew my rule in Adam. What y'all are going through is from your open enemy who invites you into dialogue that don't make no sense. It's not even real, and he changed it every second if he get away with it. You don't want to believe in dogs, you can believe in Santa Claus. You don't want to believe in Santa Claus, you have you believe in the rabbit. And have you arguing and getting the best of your nature, your heart, your emotions, all climbed up in time to talk about something that's not even real, like you said, and know it. But we don't know the right way yet, or we don't believe in the right way yet. We don't believe that Allah is God and that we really is created. We think that we're just something that's not to be defined. There's no answer to it. And we are wrong, especially those of us who, in the community of Imam Warfi Muhammad, in the experience of the slaves who came through here in America, we are fools for sitting up here arguing with people who are really asking us for help through their own revelation that Allah has sent them regardless. How far it go back has always told the human creation that there's only one God. And Satan is your enemy, and I have given my word to him to test you, to prove that he's better than you after I have told him that you are the best of creation and to bow down to it. So why are you wasting your time and you haven't done anything but spend your time, your money, your energy, your children, on something, and you don't have nothing. Look what Prophet Jesus said. He said, why are you wasting your time talking to these people, trying to save them, and you lose your own damn soul? Ain't built a house, ain't built a hospital, your food is corrupt, your air is corrupt,
right.
And you're arguing with these people who are really asking you for help. But we can't get it. That's why they hate us. That's one of the reasons. They hate us because we believe in something we won't live. So that they can get a part of it or be a part of it. They know we won so, but they also have the mercy and the freedom that Allah has given us. Allah know why he has made us all his servants. He know why no other creation come out. He know why certain people get anointed. Certain people become free from the whispers of the Satan. Some people know how to go back out and stick to the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth, because that's the best thing you can do for anybody is to be a model of what's in their heart. And we know the Quran is in their heart, whether they believe it or not. And that goes for Muslims. Everything that they need is in their heart. And they got the mind, the intellect, the ability to make it whatever they want to make with it, as long as they're doing it, to make it help them worship Allah. Because we got another
way. All
right,
thank you. All right, thank you, sir. Walaikum salam. I appreciate it. All right, we have one more. Let's see. All right. We have another PSA for you, and then we'll come back and take your calls.
Peace and blessings. I'm DeLacy Umar Phillips, producer and host of the Dynamic Islamic Faith Program, preparing to make it in the land of plenty, right here on AM 360 radio broadcast, the number one Islamic station in the nation, where your intellect is respected, your voice protected. Brought to you each Saturday, 10 a.m. till 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Preparing to make it in the land of plenty is how we focus on the principles of Al-Islam and how they prepare us to be successful in the dynamic, diverse life of the Western culture. Thank you. See you right here, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Saturday. Peace and blessings.
All right. So, you know, change the images of psychological slavery. You know, the psychological slavery is worse than the physical slavery. Huh? The psychological slavery is worse than the physical slavery. We can take the chain off of you, off your wrist, off your ankle, you know. We can take those chains off, but getting the chain off of your mind, getting the chain from around your mind, that's a tough one, you know. And like I say, even the Christians, some of the Christians, they're pushing that. And I'll play a little bit of this brother, this pastor. He's talking about.
God called it holy.
That's right.
And God said for us not to please ourselves. Now, when you're not holy, when you don't have holy teaching, when you're not in a holy church, and you don't have a holy preacher, and you don't believe in the Holy Ghost,
yes,
and no one is standing for the Holy Word, then you got to have a church full of sinners.
That's right.
Pull that out. Pull that out and put it to the front there. Just pull it out. Slide it on out, brother. Slide it out. Slide it right there. Right there. Just right there is good enough.
Lord.
This is in some of your church.
He's pointing to a Christmas tree.
Thank God for television. This is in some of your church. This is in some of your homes.
That's right.
Muslim too.
Now, your pastor is telling you Jesus' birthday is coming on the 25th. Your pastor is a liar. The Bible ain't never said Jesus was born December 25th. Not only is your pastor a liar, your mama.
That's right.
You talking about my mama? Your mama.
Amen.
Your daddy. Children, there is no Santa Claus. Your mama or your daddy bought them presents. There is no Santa Claus.
Now, see, now they're just catching up, man. I don't agree with his tone, you know. That's his shtick. That's the way he does it. But I'm going back, and those of you remember, when the imam first came in, he told us that at a time when children need to learn gratitude to their parents, some of y'all will remember this along with me. They need to learn gratitude to their parents for working so hard and sacrificing to buy them a little gifts. They want you to give that gratitude to a mythological figure that don't look nothing like them. That's what they want you to give the gratitude to. Hard as it is to maintain good relations with your children, they want you to give the gratitude that you went out and worked hard to buy them something, buy them a toy or something that they like, and buy them clothes and things and feed them and keep them well-fed and warm in the wintertime. They want you to give that gratitude to someone that don't even exist and don't even look like you. the fact that I'm having to reiterate this again to you all today and have to tell you that the Imam said it, which he did. I'm not lying. But if I didn't tell you the Imam said it, you wouldn't want to accept it from me, even though it's still just as true if I said it. Is it true or not? I'm telling you what the Imam said. Now, you all never going to get me away from the Imam, so you can forget about that. That you might as well give up on. And the Imam said, you should tell that imposter to undress. And the Imam was a little harsh with it. I won't tell you what he said before that. He said, now get undressed. So you want to bring your children to a man, you're talking about pedophilia, you want to bring your children to a department store and have them sit on the lap and tell them what they want. Sit on the lap of someone who don't look like, I don't care if he do look like you. Now they got a black Santa. And sit on a stranger's lap and tell him, whisper in his ear, what's good. Am I making this up? Now the fact of the matter is that it's hurting some people's feelings. Muslims is a doggone shame. It shouldn't be hurting your feelings as Muslims. You know that there's no such thing as no Santa Claus. And don't be teaching your children that. You got to teach your children. My father wasn't a Muslim, but he taught us early on. They ain't no, and that they would, well, keep your kid away from mine because my kid is enjoying Santa Claus and you're spoiling it. And they told us when we became Muslim, you need to get that baby some Christmas, get him some toys. Don't take that away from your child. And I didn't take that away from my children. I didn't take that away from my kids. I'm not taking it away from my grandson because I bought them toys, the things that they wanted, so that they didn't feel deprived. I got them gifts on Eid. That's our holiday, Eid. We have Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha after Ramadan. So that's not our holiday. Christmas is not our holiday. That's somebody else's holiday. But they make you feel isolated. They make you feel bad. Oh, well, if you want to be a Muslim, that's to do what you want to do. But don't do that to that baby. Our parents said that, their grandparents, et cetera. Huh? So it's not that we don't come together with our families on these holidays, but we have to be intelligent. Otherwise, they will suck us right back down into that hole that we got, that we climbed out of. And we fought too hard for that. I can remember Imam Bakuddin, Rahim Allah Lay, going to the, it was a Muslim that had a little store, little restaurant right next to us, fast food place, not really a restaurant, but yeah, fast food restaurant. And he had a Christmas tree in there. And the Imam cussed him out. And I said, well, Brother Imam, why would you do that? He said, well, he told him, either take down the tree or we're going to send security in here to take it down. I'm telling you what happened. I said, Brother Imam, how you going? And the man said, and I'm going to call the police. I said, Brother Imam, how you going to tell him what to do in his place? He said, we worked too hard for him to come. And he was an immigrant. It was an immigrant Muslim place. Worked too hard for him to come back and reconstitute that foolishness in our community. So these are some of the things that we want to bring to your attention. We hope that you enjoy your day today with your family. You know, it's good to have a meal together with your family. But you need to, and don't argue about it. You don't need to argue about it. Don't argue about politics or anything like that. Just enjoy the time that you have with your family. So until next time, we pray that you have a blessed Juma, a Juma Mubarak, and that you enjoy your time together with your family. Stay healthy. And don't let the differences of opinion on politics, et cetera, spoil your time together, your precious time with your family. Until next time, assalamu alaikum.